Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Bernanke speaks. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke spoke last hour in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. It's the annual global summit of central bank leaders. That must be really a fun group to have lunch with, right? And although many anticipated an announcement of a new Fed stimulus policy initiative, such as a third round of so-called quantitative easing, a lot of money flow to stimulate the economy, Bernanke made no such statement. Instead, he mostly waxed optimistic about the long-term prospects of the U.S. economy. He said, quote, "The growth fundamentals of the United States do not appear to have been permanently altered by the shocks of the past 4 years," end quote. So joining me now to talk about what was said and what wasn't said and what impact it might have on jobs and on politics is Joshua Zumbrunn. He's Bloomberg News Fed reporter. Josh, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
He also chided Congress a little bit, didn't he, here? He kind of was saying, look, we're just the central bank. There's only so much we can do with monetary policy. You guys have to pass some stimulus if you want to stimulate the economy. Reading between the lines, did he say that to Congress?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't know if it was a call for stimulus, but he was definitely telling them that they need to get their act together. You know, he's telling them that the trajectory the country is on is off course, and it's they're the ones that can fix it. You know, he can't rewrite the laws. He can just kind of manipulate the interest rate, and that, you know, he's saying that there's a lot more that's wrong with the country than the interest rate, and I don't think very many people would disagree with that.
And I'm interested by the quote that we read from, which said the growth fundamentals of the United States do not appear to have been permanently altered by the shocks of the past 4 years. Because I wonder if he thought it was his job to address precisely those fears. I'll bet a whole country is wondering, is this it? Is this the end for the United States economy as it has been in the past? Are our growth fundamentals permanently altered by this? And with Bernanke being so pessimistic in his other recent appearance just a couple of weeks ago, where he said he was going to keep interest rates near zero for the next 2 years, which is basically saying, hey, folks, this is not coming back anytime soon. Maybe he felt it was now his job to soothe everybody by saying, yeah, but it's not permanent.
And one of the things, I think that's exactly right, and one of the things you saw with the stock market is it went down initially because everybody thought, oh, there's going to be all this new money to help kind of keep prices up. But now stocks are going up again, and one of the reasons it's out there, we quote James Paulson from Wells Fargo in our story. He says that people will start to develop some confidence that this thing can recover on its own without Fed assistance. You know, so maybe that's exactly what's happening is he's trying to encourage people to realize, you know, that this economy isn't permanently damaged, that it's still got a hole to climb out of. But once it gets out of that hole, we'll get back to the good times.
And I have the Dow down about 20 as of 11 o'clock. So it had dipped more than that in first response?
Yeah, I mean, it was down almost 200.
Oh, really?
At one point this morning, and it's recovered. It's picking up. It looks like it might even get into positive territory. Uh-huh.
That's a big swing in an hour from down almost 200 to down 20. So another quote from the speech, Bernanke said, "The Federal Reserve has a range of tools that could be used to provide additional monetary stimulus," unquote, though he didn't actually suggest any. So now I feel like we're in Alan Greenspan territory. We have to start parsing the words, like, you know, Greenspanology. Well, what did he mean? Why, if he wasn't going to do anything, did he make a point of saying that we have many tools that could be used?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where he's talking to – his main concern when he gives these speeches is always people who hang on to every speech, you know, people like me who read everything that he says in
public. This is your job as a Fed reporter.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, what that signals is that – last year when he gave a speech in Jackson Hole, he listed what he said, you know, we have all these tools, and then he listed what they were. And sure enough, the first tool that he listed was what they ended up doing. By giving this speech, saying we have tools but not listing what they are, it kind of sends a signal that it's going to be a little while if they do use any tools before they use them because they haven't defined which one they would use. You know, there's always kind of an order. There's a progression in what happens. He says there's a problem. He says they will fix it. He says what tool they would probably use to fix it, and then they implement that tool. Mm. So we're still kind of that extra step away from getting action. So it suggests we're not quite as close to action, and it tells us that they definitely are waiting to see what happens with the economy before they plunge in with another big program.
Why do you think he didn't act? Because I think Bernanke, knowing his history, is very bent toward action, toward being aggressive to stimulate the economy.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. One reason is there's a lot of disagreement even within the Federal Reserve right now. At the last meeting, when they agreed to hold interest rates at near zero until mid-2013, three of the 10 members who vote on those decisions, the Federal Open, the FOMC it's called, three of the 10 of them dissented from the decision.
That's unusual?
It hasn't. The last time that's happened is 1992. We'd never had three dissents under Ben Bernanke. The time it happened in 1992, two people wanted tighter policy, one person wanted looser policy. So it was a split vote, so it isn't even the same. This was three people all wanting the policy to go in a different direction. So it's really remarkable. It's something that happens only a couple of times in a lifetime. And so that's something that definitely has to give him a little bit of pause. It has to make them move a little bit slower. Move a little bit slower. He's somebody who wants to operate the Fed with consensus, and he doesn't have that right now.
He wants to operate it with consensus, but he wants to operate it with an aggressive hand. This is why he's controversial. He's a fascinating figure to me, Ben Bernanke. I mean, he's not a charismatic figure, but he, you know, he was an expert on Great Depression economics as an academic coming into this job. And he was an expert who had written a book, basically, that said they weren't interventionist enough at all points in the Great Depression. Though he never expected to actually be tested with another thing that sort of resembled the Great Depression. Nobody anticipated this. So he's been acting with this unique knowledge of and perspective on history, informing his every move. And, you know, his bent seems to be to act, lest the economy sink into a longer-term slump.
When he was still an academic and he was writing about Japan, you know, Japan went through a very similar problem. Their home prices and their property prices just shot through the roof, and it was unsustainable, and it collapsed so badly. And Japan has
just a self-reinforcing deflationary spiral.
Exactly, and Japan has suffered ever since. And Bernanke, as an academic, said that it was a case of self-induced paralysis. The policymakers just needed to get out there. They needed to be aggressive with their monetary tools. And then when he actually got into the hot seat, he realized there was a lot more constraints to that. You know, he realized that in theory, you can do something like temporarily raise the inflation rate a little bit and then lower it back down. And in your theoretical models, that works really great. But then in reality, when you're actually a central banker, you realize, whoa, you know, can I actually temporarily put this at 3% and then lower it back to 1%? And are people going to have the reaction to that we want? Or are people going to freak out and say, you know, why is the Fed raising prices on everything I want to buy? And, you know, when you get into the realities of policymaking, it gets a little bit harder.
That idea was at the heart of Paul Krugman's column today in the New York Times, that Bernanke had taken these positions with respect to Japan's failure to intervene. And I think one of the things specifically was in the famous to people like you who cover the Fed for a living, I guess 10-year-ago speech with respect to Japan, or his writing with respect to Japan, in which he said, yeah, they could have pushed the inflation rate temporarily up to 3 or 4%, and that would have helped generate growth, which would perhaps, hopefully, have, you know, sparked them out of this long-term spiral that's so damaging. Is there something he could theoretically have done, as obviously Paul Krugman and other liberal economists would like him to do, that would actually push growth and inflation up by a few points?
Well, you know, Krugman says that the way to do that would be to launch a third round of quantitative easing, and to make it much bigger, and to make it clear that what he's trying to do is raise the inflation rate, but only temporarily. That kind of once we get prices back to their normal trajectory, we'll get back to usual. So the idea is to just temporarily run a lot of inflation to make up for kind of some of the deflation that the economy has seen. One difference, though, between Japan and the U.S. that I think is pretty important to emphasize here is that Japan really had falling prices. It had actually everything in the economy. The prices were getting cut, not a huge amount, but 1 or 2% a year. And because of that, everyone's wages were getting cut. Like, that's really the key thing, is that it's not just prices, it's also wages. When an economy goes into a deflationary spiral, people get their pay cut. So it's not the case that, like, everything goes on sale. It's not like it's not a giant shopping holiday that happened in Japan. It's the opposite. Everybody started getting their wages cut, too. But the difference with the U.S. economy is that although wages aren't really doing anything, there is some growth in prices, especially in the commodities, in food, and you know, gasoline is back up at three. It's down a little bit. It was up at $4. It's down at $3.70 nationally or whatever. But it's still there. And so it gives the Fed a little less wiggle room than maybe Japan had with that sort of idea.
With the fear that the disparity between wage growth and price growth could be exacerbated and people would feel even more pain. So you have Paul Krugman on the one hand pushing Bernanke to go in one direction, and then you have politicians like Rick Perry pushing hard, and Perry's probably more influential than Krugman right now. Here's a clip, which many of our listeners have probably heard, of Rick Perry speaking in no uncertain terms, let us say, about what he would think of a QE3 if Bernanke were to announce such a thing.
I don't know what y'all would do to them in Iowa, but we would treat them pretty ugly down in Texas. I mean, printing more money to play politics at this particular time in American history is almost treacherous or treasonous, in my opinion. Because all it's going to be doing, we've already tried this, all it's going to be doing is devaluing the dollar in your pocket.
So Rick Perry with that controversial clip that another Republican presidential hopeful, John Huntsman, pushed back against the other day as being extreme for calling Bernanke almost treasonous just for considering a technical fix to the economy. Why is this such an ideological strong point? Why does somebody who's shoring up his conservative credentials hate the Fed and hate Fed action?
You know, I think a lot of the answer to that question goes back to Ron Paul. Ron Paul has made one.
He doesn't think there should be a Fed.
Right. He's made one of his key issues telling people that a lot of the problems in the economy, or even maybe the majority of the problems in the economy, come from the Federal Reserve system, from its willingness to print money, from using a paper money system instead of what the country had a long time ago, a gold standard, where you could actually, you know, take dollar bills and get them redeemed for pieces of gold if you wanted to do that.
Nixon took us off the gold standard, right?
Nixon took us off it completely. The country had been kind of drifting away from it for a much longer period of time. And even when the country was on the gold standard, what would periodically happen is they'd say, you know, you can take your dollar bill and get an ounce of gold, and then the Congress would go in and say, all right, we're going to change it. You only get half an ounce of gold. And that, you know, that's the same thing as kind of printing twice as much paper money. So you had a lot of the old dynamics even under the gold standard. So really, you'd never been on a pure gold standard in the United States.
Perry mentioned the dollar specifically in that clip. Why would he want a strong dollar? Why is that more important than trying to stimulate growth?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a clear underlying economic philosophy that was stated in those remarks, at least. And that's not making a broader comment about
right.
Rick Perry. I don't know what the
But in general,
the
economically, is it that people who advocate a strong dollar, and a lot of mostly conservative economists do, is it that they think we're going to do better for the economy by being able to buy imports at cheap prices than we are by making other trade-offs?
Some people make that argument, and it doesn't make a huge amount of sense, because the U.S. Imports
relatively
well.
Let me take that back.
US,
we have a big
the US
trade deficit.
Imports, the U.S. imports more than it exports right now.
That's right.
Yeah. So I think you can make the case that a stronger currency helps you keeps your imports a little cheaper, which is more important when you have more imports than exports.
That's the argument, anyway, on that. It's just a question of what different people think should be emphasized, I guess, to fix the economy. Are there also political interests there? You know, is it just an honest argument between people with two different points of view as to what would help more? Or are there also powerful campaign donors or somebody behind the idea that the dollar should come first?
Yeah, I mean, in general, the banking system or people with a huge amount of money, it's you know, if you have a huge amount of dollars, it's obviously a little bit more important to you that those dollars don't lose any of their value, and you know, as opposed to somebody who is kind of a wage earner who doesn't have a huge amount of savings. I mean, for most people I know, 3% inflation, especially if it came with a 3% wage increase. You know, that's a really important caveat, I think, if you need your wages moving with your prices. You know, for most of the people I know, if they have 3% and 3%, it's not a big deal. But for people who have a huge amount of dollar-denominated savings or whatever, you can see the case that 3% kind of hits them a lot more, especially if they're not in that situation with the wages. But you know, again, I think it really goes back to the popularity of that particular strain of libertarian politics within the Republican Party right now.
So the headline from Ben Bernanke's much anticipated speech in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, last hour is basically no headline, or at least no action to stimulate the economy now, as had been widely anticipated. The stock market relatively flat on the news. So whatever had been already built in was already built in, I guess. And before you go, one last thing. He did seem to announce that the Fed meeting in September would be extended from 1 day to 2 days. And I see already some people are taking that as an indication that maybe they're going to do something more aggressive at that time. So here we go again. Does this just put us into another month of mindless media speculation about something that Ben Bernanke may or may not do, or does that actually indicate something?
No, unfortunately, I think it does put us in for another mindless month. You know, the difference is going to be that we're going to have a month more of economic data. The Fed has really kind of stuck to their guns that they think this recovery is going to pick up a little bit more steam, and we'll have 1 month more information to know whether that's the case. You know, right now, we're coming in, you know, just a week after or 2 weeks after a pretty big stock crash. You know, we really are looking it looks ugly out there right now. A month from now, if the economic data starts to pick up, that's really going to dampen the speculation that the Fed is going to do a lot more. So although it will kind of lead to a month of speculation, by the time we get to the end of that month, we're going to have a lot more information about what this economy looks like.
I think I'm seeing about plus 60 on the Dow now. Do you have that in front of you?
Yeah, that's what I see too.
So it went from almost minus 200 to plus 60 from the beginning of the speech until now. So I don't know. Maybe Warren Buffett bought more bank shares.
While everyone was distracted by Bernanke, he was out buying all the stocks cheap.
That's right. All right, Joshua Zumbrun covers the Federal Reserve for Bloomberg News. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up next. Are you here on a J-1 visa? We'll talk about young foreigners here for summer jobs. Are some of them taking jobs Americans should have? And are some of them being exploited? Did you hear about that J-1 strike in Hershey, Pennsylvania? And we will keep following the track of Hurricane Irene. We'll review the preparations once again that you should be making. Might they really shut down the whole MTA tomorrow? And we'll take calls later on how you're changing your plans for the weekend. Anyone postponing your wedding? So stay with us. Brian Lehrer and WNYC.